When you try and convict and punish people severely for insignificant, you know, for being rude, for being people they don't like, the reason that you would do that is to send a message. And the message is this: we have total authority over you. Bow to us. Obey us. Do not question us. Do not stand up against us. That's the message. You do not defy the state. The state controls you. The state is all powerful. You belong to the state. I mean, this is, it's almost like this is being used as a template for what to do right now. The Reichstag fire.
Mr. Reagan.
We are living through some dark days. A lot of people believe that what's happening now will lead to authoritarianism. And they have good reason to believe this, because what's going on right now has happened before. And I don't mean it's happened before in some kind of similar, vaguely similar way. You could draw analogies. What I mean is that what's happening now has happened before exactly. I'm going to read an article to you guys, published by the Smithsonian Magazine, which will, I think, illustrate beautifully exactly what I'm trying to say. Beautifully is probably the wrong word to use to describe it, but it will illustrate what I'm trying to say very clearly. In 1933, there was a fire in Germany, and this burning of this one building is what led to Hitler's rise to power. It led to World War II. It led to the genocide of the Jews in Nazi Germany. It led to everything we know about Nazi Germany. We use Nazi Germany as an analogy for bad things that happen today. We, you know, a lot of people call Donald Trump a Nazi. A lot of people call Trump supporters Nazis, right? They like to use that, the word Nazi. They like to talk about Nazi Germany as a metaphor for Trump and for conservatives. But in reality, the Democrats are doing everything precisely as the Nazis did right now. They all warned everybody, right? They said, Trump's going to be this evil dictator. He's going to be this great authoritarian. He's a fascist. Everything that they warned you that Trump was going to do, they are now doing. All right, so let's give this article a read, and I think that you'll understand what I'm trying to say. All right, again, as I said, this is an article that was published by the Smithsonian Magazine. The true story of the Reichstag fire and the Nazi rise to power. When the German parliamentary building went up in flames, Hitler harnessed the incident to seize power. This is by somebody by the name of Lorraine. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. Boissonneau? Boissonneau? I don't know. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And where there's fire, conspiracy theories are sure to follow. At least that's what happened in Germany on February 27th, 1933, when a sizable portion of the parliamentary building in Berlin, the Reichstag, went up in flames from an arson attack. Now, I should be clear about this. The parliamentary building in Berlin, the Reichstag, that is precisely the equivalent of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. That's where they held parliament, right? Their version of Congress, right? What they would have, their representatives, their state representatives, you might call them, were housed in the Reichstag. That's where they did business, the same as our Congress. Our Congress meets in the Capitol building. That's where they do business. This is the German equivalent of the U.S. Capitol building. It was the canary in the political coal mine, a flashpoint event when Adolf Hitler played upon public and political fears to consolidate power, setting the stage for the rise of Nazi Germany. Since then, it's become a powerful political metaphor. Whenever citizens and politicians feel threatened by executive overreach, the Reichstag fire is referenced as a cautionary tale. Germany's first experiment with liberal democracy was born of the 1919 Weimar Constitution. This was established after the conclusion of World War I. It called for a president-elect by direct ballot who would appoint a chancellor to introduce legislation to members of the Reichstag. And the members of the Reichstag, the members of the parliament, were also elected by popular vote, right? This is, again, their equivalent of Congress. The president retained the power to dismiss his cabinet and the chancellor, dissolve an ineffective Reichstag, and, in cases of national emergency, invoke something known as Article 48, which gave the president dictatorial powers and the right to intervene directly in the governance of Germany's 19 territorial states. Following a stint in jail for his failed beer hall push in 1923, Hitler poured his energy into attaining power through legal channels. You should know, the Nazis were never elected as a majority ruling party in Germany. Adolf Hitler was never elected as chancellor. He was never elected to the presidency. The Nazis were one of a few different competing political parties in Germany at the time, and they had some small influence. They were doing actually relatively well at some point. I mean, we'll get to that. But they were never actually elected as the majority, the ruling party in Germany ever. And Hitler was certainly never elected as chancellor or as president. Hitler rose to the head of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the Nazis, and by 1928, the group's membership exceeded 100,000. The Nazis denounced the Weimar Republic and the November criminals, the politicians who had signed the Treaty of Versailles. The treaty forced Germany to accept responsibility for World War I, pay huge remunerations, transfer territory to their neighbors, and limit the size of their military. Despite its considerable growth, the Nazi Party won only 2.6% of the vote in the 1928 election. But then the Great Depression hit, sending the US and Europe into an economic tailspin and shooting the number of unemployed up to 6 million people in Germany, around 30% of the population. Sound familiar?
In the United States, where the unemployment rate for the month of April has come in at 14.7%. The figure is the worst rate since the Great Depression, as 20.5 million jobs vanished in a single month.
The sudden slump caused massive social upheaval, which the Nazis exploited to gain further political traction. By 1930, the Nazis won 18.3% of the Reichstag vote and became the second largest party after the Social Democrats, while the Communist Party also grew to 10% of the vote. The economic unrest of the early 1930s meant that no single political party had a majority in the Reichstag, so fragile coalitions held the nation together. Faced with political chaos, President Paul von Hindenburg, of course the great Hindenburg Zeppelin was named after him, President Paul von Hindenburg dissolved the Reichstag again and again. Frequent elections followed. The Nazis aligned with other right-leaning factions and gradually worked their way up to 33% of the vote. Pretty impressive, guys. But they were unable to reach a full majority. In January 1933, Hindenburg reluctantly appointed Hitler as chancellor on the advice of Franz von Papen. Thanks, Franz. Franz von Papen was a disgruntled former chancellor who believed that the conservative bourgeois parties should ally with the Nazis to keep the communists out of power. Actually, probably not that bad of a plan, considering that communists are, well, communists. March 5th was set as the date for another series of Reichstag elections in the hopes that one party might finally achieve the majority. Meanwhile, the Nazis seized even more power, infiltrating the police and empowering ordinary party members as law enforcement officers. Infiltrating the police. Sounds a little bit like deep state operatives in the FBI. On February 22nd, Hitler used his powers as chancellor to enroll 50,000 Nazi SA men, also known as stormtroopers, as auxiliary police. 2 days later, Hermann Göring, Minister of the Interior and one of Hitler's closest compatriots, ordered a raid on communist headquarters. Following the raid, the Nazis announced falsely that they'd found evidence of seditious material. Sedition. They claimed that the communists were planning to attack public buildings. They basically were telling everybody that these guys are dangerous. These guys are our enemies. They're the bad guys. You should be afraid of them. They're scary. Sounds a little bit like what the Democrats have been saying about Trump supporters for years. Despite the fact that the only really scary ones, the only people burning down buildings or destroying public property, murdering people in fact, have been since 2016, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, left-wing activists. But I digress. On the night of February 27th, around 9 o'clock, pedestrians near the Reichstag heard the sound of breaking glass. Soon after, flames erupted from the building. It took fire engines hours to quell the fire, which destroyed the debating chamber and the Reichstag's gilded cupola, ultimately causing over $1 million in damage. Police arrested an unemployed Dutch construction worker named Marinus van der Lubbe on the scene. The young man was found outside the building with firelighters in his possession and was panting and sweaty. "This is a God-given signal," Hitler told van Papen when they arrived on the scene. "If this fire, as I believe, is the work of the communists, then we must crush out this murderous pest with an iron fist." Now, this seems to me to be exactly what has happened recently with the siege of the Capitol building. There has been, for years, this threat that has been proposed by the left. Trump supporters are scary. Trump supporters will riot. Trump supporters will hurt you. Trump supporters are bad. Trump supporters are awful. And then when the Trump supporters did go to the Capitol building to protest, suddenly they found it very easy to walk inside. In fact, many people suspect that important people in Washington, D.C., on the left, on the Democrat side, realized that this was a great opportunity. If they could somehow encourage the protesters to riot, if they could get them to siege the building, take over the Capitol building, perhaps cause damage, perhaps even burn it down, then they could create another Reichstag fire. This is a theory. This is a theory that's out there. This is a speculation that people have about what went on, because it did not appear that the police were very securely guarding that Capitol building. They seemed to put up very little fight, and they had very, very few officers there actually guarding the building, despite the fact, and I have hard evidence of this, despite the fact that they knew that some Trump supporters were, in fact, planning to raid the building. This is an article here from the Washingtonian. It says, MAGA geniuses plot takeover of U.S. Capitol. Geniuses is, of course, they're being sarcastic. This guy, Andrew Bojan, who is clearly a leftist degenerate, he has written this whole thing about how Trump supporters, online, they've planned this siege of the Capitol. He writes, the Donald.win, an online forum for fans of President Trump, is on fire Tuesday with members' plans to travel to D.C. for pro-Trump rallies. Since the rallies coincide with Congress's expected confirmation of Joe Biden's victory over Trump, he writes, the Donald.win, an online forum for fans of President Trump, is on fire Tuesday with members' plans to travel to D.C. for pro-Trump rallies. Since the rallies coincide with Congress's expected confirmation of Joe Biden's victory over Trump, a subset of the Donald.win's posters have discussed ways they might occupy or storm the U.S. Capitol to make citizens arrests of lawmakers who hold old-fashioned views like honoring state-certified election results. Eva Malecki, a spokesperson for the U.S. Capitol Police, declined to comment on the MAGA fans' thought experiments, but tells Washingtonian, that's the newspaper or whatever this is that's publishing this article, that, quote, while we do not discuss the means, methods, or specific resources used to carry out our protective responsibilities, the United States Capitol Police has comprehensive security plans in place, and we continuously monitor and assess new and emerging threats with the overall goal of keeping those within the Capitol complex safe and secure. Some of the Donald.win's commenters nonetheless think that they found a way in that the cops may have forgotten. The Capitol complex's system of pedestrian tunnels, originally built to protect delicate lawmakers from Washington's weather. In one discussion, titled, If We Occupy the Capitol Building, There Will Be No Vote, for instance, commenters bat around the idea while taking into consideration doors that are, quote, built like castle walls, end quote, barricades, and law enforcement. Tunnels are a big topic of discussion on these posts. Now, obviously, they didn't end up using these tunnels. They just ended up pushing their way through. But the point is that given that this article was written on December 5th, and the protest happened on the 6th, clearly the Capitol Police knew that this was a possibility, that there were some people who were planning on doing this. So why wasn't security ramped up? Why did they have 3 police officers in an area where they needed 6 or 10, instead of doubling them up and having 20 or maybe even 30 officers there to stop anybody who's trying to storm the building? And of course, we've all seen the video footage of officers barely trying to fight back protesters, just essentially letting people into the Capitol. I mean, maybe that's not what they were doing. Maybe they were making a genuine effort to stop these protesters, but that's not what it looks like. Let's get back to the Reichstag fire. So Adolf Hitler tells von Papen that this is a God-given signal. He says, if this fire, as I believe, is the work of the communists, then we must crush out this murderous pest with an iron fist. And that's essentially what the Democrats have been saying, right? They are calling the people who walked into the Capitol building insurrectionists. I've seen a lot of video footage of the siege of the Capitol, of the storming of the Capitol. And I can tell you this, almost all the footage shows regular Americans walking casually through the building. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but this doesn't seem like a particularly nefarious effort. I mean, this is not, they're not breaking statues. They're not pulling statues down. They're not burning anything. They're not doing anything that's particularly vicious or nasty. And they're certainly not doing anything that's scary or particularly violent. Certainly there were some scuffles between protesters and police, but nothing like anything that happened with Antifa or Black Lives Matter, which I mean, you've seen the comparisons over the last couple of days. We've all been talking about them. The reaction to Black Lives Matter, the reaction to Antifa, versus the reaction to these patriots, these regular Americans, these Trump supporters, simply walking casually through the Capitol building. I mean, it's ridiculous. They treat Black Lives Matter, they treat Antifa as if they're somehow angels, that they're perfectly decent people doing the right thing, standing up for what they believe in. But then they turn around and they treat these patriots who walked casually through the Capitol building. Most of them looked like tourists. They treat them like enemies of the state. They treat them as if they're terrorists. In fact, they've called them terrorists. They call them insurrectionists. They call them terrorists. They've called the president of the United States a terrorist. They called the president of the United States an insurrectionist. There was one article somewhere where they said that Donald Trump has committed treason. It's funny, you know, because I don't even remember the moment where Donald Trump was like, all right, everybody, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go up to the Capitol building. There's going to be a few police officers that are scattered. And we're going to push down the barricades. We're going to scuffle with the officers. We're going to break in. And then we're going to walk around casually around the various halls of the Capitol building. I don't remember Donald Trump ever saying that. It's kind of funny. But he's being blamed for this, right? He's being demonized. They're saying that he provoked this assault on our democracy. Let's keep reading. Maybe we'll find a few more parallels between what happened the other day and the burning of the Reichstag building. A few hours later, on February 28th, Hindenburg invoked Article 48, and the cabinet drew up the Decree of the Reich President for the Protection of the People and State. The act abolished freedom of speech, assembly, privacy, and the press, legalized phone tapping and interception of correspondence, and suspended the autonomy of federal states like Bavaria. Now that sounds really familiar. What are we talking about here? We're talking about the censoring of information. You are only now allowed to hear what the state wants you to hear, right? And who is currently in power? Leftists. And who is currently controlling the information that you're hearing? Leftists. Leftists in Silicon Valley, in Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Twitter no longer allows the President of the United States access to his account. Think about that. The President of the United States of America, he has access to the nuclear codes, but he does not have access to his own Twitter account because Twitter thinks that they are so important that they should be able to dictate whether or not Donald Trump has access to his own account on their site, on their app, so that he can communicate directly with the American people. This is sick. This is twisted. This is the beginnings of authoritarianism. This is what that looks like. The left is constantly telling us, or constantly told us for 4 years, that Trump was the bad guy, right? That he was the fascist, that he was the authoritarian, that he was going to take your rights away. But Trump went through all 4 years of his tenure as president. He didn't take any of your rights away. In fact, before coronavirus, we were the freest and the most prosperous that we have ever been in the history of this country. As soon as coronavirus hit, the Democrats used that depression, used that catastrophe, really, in order to suppress the American people, to condition us to do what we tell them. Wear the mask. Don't gather in groups. You're not allowed to go to work anymore. You're not allowed to go to the gym. Heck, you're not even allowed to go walk outside. Between these hours and these hours, you have to be inside your home. They outlawed everything. Then, just as it looked like we were getting out of it, right? We had a vaccine. Trump could be elected another time. We could get rid of all these draconian measures. We could get rid of all this authoritarianism. We could move on from the virus. They somehow got Biden in. They somehow got all these Democrats elected into the Senate. So now they control the entire government. So now these draconian measures can be made permanent if they want. Let's continue reading. That night, around 4,000 people were arrested, imprisoned, and tortured by the SA, the stormtroopers. Although the Communist Party had won 17% of the Reichstag elections in November 1932, and the German people elected 81 communist deputies in the March 5th elections, many were detained indefinitely after the fire. So they took those 81 communist deputies and they just put them in prison. Gone. They're no longer part of the parliament. So their empty seats left the Nazis largely free to do as they wished. Now, that's really fascinating, right? So the Nazis could not establish a 50% majority in Congress, or in Congress and Parliament, right? Their version of our Congress. It sounds so familiar. It's like we had this runoff election in Georgia, and you thought, well, you know, a lot of conservatives felt like the general election was stolen, like the executive branch was stolen, the presidential election was stolen from us, that Joe Biden really did not win all the votes, that the election was rigged. A lot of us believe that. But now there was this runoff election, and It was very likely that conservatives were going to win. Everybody sort of believed that conservatives were going to win. But everybody also kind of suspected that, well, what if they cheat? A lot of people thought, well, there's no way, because everybody's eyes are on George. There's no way they would do that again. But then a lot of more cynical people said, oh, yes, they will. They definitely are doing this. And that's exactly what they did. Well, at least that's what we think that they did. Can't say that they did that because, you know, that would be fake news, right? We couldn't say that. That would be disinformation, probably Russian disinformation. So, yeah, so a lot of us believe that the Georgia election was rigged, the runoff election. The Democrats were able to get both of those runoff elections in their favor, and now they control the executive branch and both houses of Congress. But anyway, it's funny how that works, right? You know, they have this problem, and then Hitler's like, well, let's just get rid of the people in Congress we don't like so that we then have a majority. And the Democrats are like, okay, the only impediment to total power in the federal government are these two seats in the Senate. And suddenly they magically get those two seats in the Senate. Just funny how that works, isn't it? Anyway, I thought that was an interesting other parallel. Later that year, a sensational criminal trial got underway. The accused included von der Lubbe, Ernest Torgler, leader of the Communist Party in the Reichstag, and three Bulgarian communists. Now, this is interesting. Sensational criminal trial got underway. Right? They're trying to demonize these folks. These are the bad guys. Well, what are they trying to do right now? Nancy Pelosi is trying to impeach Donald Trump. Well, that would be a sensational trial, wouldn't it? Exactly the same thing. It's bizarre. I mean, it's almost like this is being used as a template for what to do right now. It's mind-boggling. It's so similar. It's like literally what happened in 1933. It's insane. Now, in this case, they are not putting on trial the so-called domestic terrorists. Instead, they're going right after Donald Trump. He's the villain. He's the bad guy. He's the one we need to demonize. But interestingly, and you may not be aware of this, Joe Biden, I believe, or somebody on the Democrat side, but I think it's Joe Biden, proposed a law recently, a federal law that would target domestic terrorists, right? Create new, vicious, nasty, horrible punishments for domestic terrorists. But a lot of us on the right that are a bit cynical now, a bit skeptical, we're starting to think that this new law is being designed specifically to target conservatives. This is not going to be the prosecution of domestic terrorists, but rather the persecution of conservatives. Because just as they're designing this new law, they're also claiming that those who stormed the Capitol, those who casually walked through the building, that those people are in fact domestic terrorists. So I imagine this law could be used to try these people and to put them into prison, to punish them for their actions walking through the building. And, you know, these people clearly didn't do anything wrong. You know, I mean, I'm sure a couple of them were a bit, vandalized a couple of things or were a bit rude or something. One guy put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. Oh, dearest me, no. He didn't put his shoes up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. I mean, that guy will really get it. You know, because when you, as a governing body, when you try and convict and punish people severely for insignificant, you know, for being rude, for being people they don't like, the reason that you would do that is to send a message. And the message is this: we have total authority over you. Bow to us. Obey us. Do not question us. Do not stand up against us. Do not put your filthy, disgusting, deplorable shoes on magnificent Princess Pelosi's desk. How dare you defy us? That's the message. You do not defy the state. The state controls you. The state is all powerful. You belong to the state. That's the message. That's the message when they persecute people who have done nothing wrong. And the people who stormed that Capitol building, stormed it, and walked around casually within its halls, they did nothing wrong. So if they're persecuted, you know that's exactly the message they're trying to send you. All right, let's continue reading. As the trial in Germany proceeded, a different kind of trial captured the public discourse. Willy Munzenberg, a German communist, allied himself with other communists to undertake an independent investigation of the fire. The combined research resulted in the publication of The Brown Book on the Reichstag Fire and Hitler Terror. It included early accounts of Nazi brutality, as well as an argument that von der Lubbe was in fact the pawn of the Nazis. Hitler's party members were the real criminals. The book argued that they orchestrated the fire to consolidate political power. The book became a bestseller, translated into 24 languages, and sold around Europe and the US. And this is the point that I'm trying to make here, right? A lot of people are speculating that, in fact, the police stood down when the Trump protesters, the protesters at the Capitol, were trying to get in. That, in fact, the police let the protesters in. That they were intentionally understaffed, and they barely put up a fight so that the protesters could go in and that it could be called a riot and that it could be called, you know, storming the Capitol. It could be called an insurrection because there were police officers there guarding the Capitol, just barely, and certainly not enough to stop anybody coming in. So this is sort of the same theory that this guy had, that in fact this was staged. This was intended. It was intended that conservatives would walk through the building. In fact, I suspect that whomever organized this or whomever dreamed this plan up of calling Trump supporters insurrectionists for walking through the Capitol building, I suspect that they imagined that Trump supporters would have been a lot more violent, that Trump supporters would have been a lot more brutal and vicious and dirty and would have burned more things and would have broken more things, and for there to be a second Reichstag fire. That's my guess. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. But if it was orchestrated, if this whole thing was planned, I suspect that it was something like that that was planned to happen. And just I don't think anybody expected that conservatives storming the Capitol would be just so darn polite, you know, basically walking through the halls like tourists, appreciating the art, enjoying the beautiful statues. And that's just the nature of conservatives. We're not violent. We're not vicious. We don't want to destroy things. That's Black Lives Matter. That's Antifa. That's not us. So this plan didn't really work out properly. The calls for the heads of the conservatives who walked through the Capitol building are, I think, by most people, considered to be pretty severe overreaction. Certainly you get your nuts on Twitter who are saying, like, you know, off with their heads. But the vast majority of Americans, I don't think, would expect prison time for people walking casually through the Capitol. But that seems to be what they're saying. They're calling it an insurrection. They're calling these people terrorists. They're saying that these people undermine democracy. None of that is true. Allow me to continue. This is a quote here by historian Anson Robbenbach. He writes, "Beyond the controversy stood the larger issue of the nature of the National Socialist seizure of power. Was the dictatorship the result of a political crime or simply an opportune event?" And that's the big question right now, right? A lot of conservatives, as I said, believe that this whole thing was staged. This whole thing was set up. But maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it really was just an organic, a thing that happened. There was a big crowd of people. A few of them decided, you know what, we're going to storm the Capitol. Everybody went along with it, and people just ended up walking through the Capitol, overwhelming the police with sheer numbers. And maybe it just so happened that by chance the police were understaffed. Maybe even though the police maybe had heard about this, which clearly they have because I've shown you the article, maybe the Capitol Police just didn't believe that any such thing was going to happen. I've heard people say that, you know, law enforcement really doesn't expect there to be any kind of pushback from conservatives. They expect it from Antifa, they expect it from Black Lives Matter, they don't expect it from conservatives. So it is feasible that in fact this all happened naturally. The storming of the Capitol building might have just been an organic event that happened in that moment. And the police simply didn't have the numbers there. They just simply weren't prepared. It seems silly, it seems ridiculous. They were having a very important, you know, political meeting at the time, and they knew that there was a massive crowd outside. You'd think that they would have doubled and tripled their numbers, but they didn't. So I think most of you watching are probably going to be looking at me like, what are you talking about? Of course they did it on purpose. Of course they didn't put enough cops out there. But look, I do occasionally need to play devil's advocate on this show. And the reason I need to is because I need to say that even if this siege of the Capitol building, even if this was just a natural event, it was conservatives, all conservatives, no agitators in there, no planning for police, even if it was a natural thing, it wasn't really a terrible thing. In fact, I think of it as a good thing, because people were desperate to have their voices heard, and politicians are not listening to them still, but they need to. And it was a good idea to do it, because you get it in the head of politicians, like, wow, these people are really serious. But they're dismissing those people. They're calling them kooks. They're calling them like terrorists. They're calling them all these bad things. They're just dismissing them. I think that's wrong. They shouldn't be. They should be listening to those people, because those people were passionate. Those people were going in for a purpose, to send a message. We believe this election was stolen, and we want it investigated. That's what they were saying. but the politicians are ignoring them. But what's worse is that the politicians are now using this protest as an excuse to seize more power. They're taking that as an opportunity. On March 23rd, the Reichstag passed the Enabling Act, the partner piece of legislation to the February 28th Decree for the Protection of the People and State. How familiar is that? Oh no, we're doing this for public safety. They always say that, right? The Enabling Act assigned all legislative power to Hitler and his ministers, thus securing their ability to control the political apparatus. When President Hindenburg died in August 1934, Hitler wrote a new law that combined the offices of president and chancellor. It was sanctioned by a national plebiscite. Did the Nazis really assist in setting the fire? Did von der Lubbe act alone? It's almost impossible to know, since most of the people who would be in the know either didn't survive World War II or weren't willing to talk about it afterwards. The German government exonerated von der Lubbe in 2008, a full 75 years after he was beheaded. And though the Reichstag fire kindled decades of mystery, one thing is clear. It played a critical role in the Nazis' rise to power. The fire proved the sway of Germany's dangerous new dictator, whose vision to remake the nation had only just begun. You see this book here? 1984. This was a vision of the way the world could be if the Soviets, Soviet-style authoritarianism, was taken over. This guy, George Orwell, was actually a socialist, right? He believed in socialism. He actually thought, this is a first printing, by the way, which I'm quite happy to own. He wrote this in 1950, right? And he saw the way that the Soviets were going, right? He saw that this kind of authoritarianism could destroy nations, could destroy entire societies. He wrote about how words in this dystopian future would mean something other than, you know, what people believed that they meant. For instance, war actually means peace. Freedom actually means slavery. Ignorance actually means strength. In this book, you had thought crimes. You couldn't think the wrong things. If you thought the wrong things, then you'd be taken away, right? You would be punished. The same thing happens now. If you post the wrong thing on Twitter, you're banned, you're censored, you're punished. There is this twisting of words, right? They say, believe all women. And then when Joe Biden is accused of sexual assault, they say, well, we didn't mean believe all women. They say, defund the police. And then when you say, well, if you defund the police, then, you know, you have all these problems, society collapses. And they say, well, when we say defund the police, we don't mean defund the police. And other people step in and they go, oh, yeah, we do. Right? There is this weird doublespeak on the left where they try to change words to mean something that, you know, whatever they want. They say, oh, racism doesn't really mean racism. Racism only means racism if you have power. And that's only true if you're white. You say, what? You know, Barack Obama had power. He's the president of the United States. Yeah, but that doesn't count because he's not white. You can only be racist if you're white. Right? They keep changing the goalposts, right? Moving the goalposts. They keep changing the definitions of words to suit what they want. In the book, the main character's job is actually to rewrite history. If Big Brother, if the government wants you to believe that homosexuality is good, suddenly great figures of history, Abraham Lincoln, becomes gay, right? And you've already heard that. You hear this a lot. You hear about a lot of figures from history that are suspected to be gay. They don't really have a lot of evidence to support this, but they have this little bit of evidence or that little bit of evidence because they want to push this idea that maybe these historical figures are gay, and if they were gay, if these great people of history were gay, maybe it's okay if you're gay too. This is how they kind of try to manipulate you. Exactly what happened in Orwell's dystopian novel. This is not a good place to live. You have no rights. You have no civil rights at all. And it looks like that's the direction we're going. And I hope that's not true. I hope we're not going in that direction. I hope that we're not going to become a society in which you have no civil rights. But it's kind of scary because they are eliminating them one by one. There's a senator by the name of Josh Hawley, and he had a book that was set to be published soon. And the publisher said, actually, we don't want to publish your book. And I don't remember the reason that they gave, but all I remember thinking is when I heard that is because we don't like your politics. We don't like what side you're on. We don't like that you're a conservative. Oh, I think that they suspect that somehow Josh Hawley incited the insurrection, the siege of the Capitol. They said, "Oh, we can't give you a book deal, you bad man." Josh Hawley. And of course, as we all know, Donald Trump has been banned from Twitter. He's been banned from Facebook. YouTube has said that if anybody says anything that they disagree with about the election, you're going to be kicked off of YouTube. So I imagine that this is one of my last broadcasts because I do believe the election was stolen. You know, I don't have to tell you that it was stolen as news. I can tell you that that's my opinion. That's what I believe. That's what I believe that the evidence shows. But that doesn't matter. I don't think YouTube cares about that. All they care about is getting the message across they want and censoring voices like mine. So I do think I will be out of a career soon, which is unfortunate, because I cannot acquiesce to saying simply the things that YouTube wants me to and nothing else. I have to say what I believe is true. And I guess that's the tough thing about having principles. A lot of people on the right were moving to Parler over the past couple of days. I actually decided to move to Parler before Trump was banned from Twitter. Just a weird coincidence. Really just before, like a couple of days before. And then I saw this massive exodus of Twitter onto Parler. And a lot of people were saying that they saw the purge of users, of conservative users on Twitter. And that did happen. But a lot of people just canceled their accounts because they were moving to Parler. So it was, I don't know what percentage of people were purged by Twitter and what percentage of moved to Parler. I don't know. But it was certainly a mix of both. So we were all on Parler, or we all are on Parler. And Parler's great. Parler still works. Parler's good. Except that after we moved to Parler, Google said, oh, because conservatives, people who maybe helped inspire the insurrection, promote this storming of the Capitol building. I don't know if they have any proof of this. They just use this as the excuse, right? This is the Reichstag fire, isn't it? This is the, oh, well, this bad thing happened. And therefore, we're going to use that as the excuse to say, well, Google is no longer going to allow you to use Parler on their phone. So you can't get the Parler app through the Google Store. I think there are ways to get it on Google-based phones, on their phones, Android devices. But they're not permitting you to get it through the App Store. Okay, a lot of people don't know how to get it if they're not getting it through the App Store. So they've essentially cut all those people off from using the app or from getting it. And then right after that, Apple said, we're not going to allow you to download Parler off our App Store. Now, I've been on Parler for quite a while now. I didn't really use it primarily. I primarily used Twitter. But I moved to it primarily. And I can tell you this, I haven't really seen all that much incitement of violence on Parler. When I say not that much, what I mean is zero. The people on Parler, at least the ones that I follow, the ones that I've seen, haven't said anything vicious, haven't said anything nasty. They're not bad people. They're just conservatives expressing political ideas. I've seen stuff that I think is disinformation, but I see that all the time on Twitter. In fact, I see disinformation all the time on CNN, on MSNBC. They don't censor any of that, do they? They only censor the disinformation on the right. And I don't like disinformation, but you know what is the best cure for disinformation? Truth. More information. Other sources, other ideas, other expressions. I will denounce disinformation when I see it on the right, just as I do disinformation on the left. But the left doesn't do that. They say disinformation on the left is actually okay. We don't have to say anything bad about it because it helps us in some way or another. But disinformation on the right, not only do we have to tell you not to listen to it, we actually have to cancel your account. We have to shut that down. We have to destroy you. And so the worst thing to happen to Parler isn't that Google canceled them. Isn't that Apple canceled them. It's that Amazon canceled them. Because Amazon happened to be the company that Parler was using to host their site. They were the company that they were using to store their information. And Amazon said, we are not going to allow you to exist either. And that totally destroyed them. So I don't know if Parler's working at the moment. It was last time I checked. But it looks like it's going to be down for about a week where they're looking for somebody else to use as their host, right, to host their information. And in the meantime, everybody's moving to something called Gab, G-A-B. I'm interested in using it. There are a number of other things people are experimenting with, but Gab seems to be what everybody's kind of flocking toward. I'll be using it. I'm on Rumble, if you want to use Rumble instead of YouTube. But it's sad. It's sad that all of these leftists, they are conspiring. There's this idea of the conspiracy theory, right? There's this term conspiracy theory. Anything the left doesn't like, they dismiss as a conspiracy theory, and they say it's been debunked. This is just a debunked conspiracy theory. Well, listen, most of the time, conspiracy theory means something that isn't true that people believe, right? That's most of the time what conspiracy theory means. But if you look at the words, a theory about a conspiracy, that's something that can exist and be accurate. You can have conspiracies. Conspiracies do happen in life. And theories about those conspiracies sometimes prove to be true. In this case, there appears to be a real conspiracy. A conspiracy between Pelosi, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know how many of these guys are, willful participants. How many of these people are being leveraged or being coerced? I don't know. But all of these people seem to have the same intention. Their intention is to silence conservatives. You are no longer allowed to express your ideas. You're no longer allowed to have a voice. It doesn't matter how rational you are. It doesn't matter how right you are. You're not allowed to say the things you think because we don't like them. We don't agree with them. We don't want to hear it. I got in a debate with a leftist a little while ago. I mentioned it on the show before. I was in Hawaii, a very nice resort. These were very wealthy, very arrogant people from San Francisco, strong leftists, white leftists, white rich leftists from San Francisco. And they eventually found out that I was a conservative YouTuber. And so they start challenging me with all of their political stuff. You know, they wanted to get in a fight with me. And it's pretty easy to wipe the floor with people that don't know what they're talking about or are obviously lying. And they ended up going into some weird directions I didn't expect. And since then, I have suspected that these might be the people that went from California to Hawaii to the lobbyists that went down with Governor Newsom and everybody else. I suspect these were some of those folks because they knew quite a bit about politics. But when we got to talking about General Michael Flynn, who everybody on the right knows Michael Flynn's story. He was persecuted by the FBI. In order to try to get to Trump, right? They wanted him to squeal. They wanted him to inform on Trump, or if he didn't have any dirt on Trump, to make something up. Michael Flynn would not do this. The guy is an honorable man. He's a dignified person. He has integrity. He is a general. He is a true patriot. And he's not going to make up dirt on somebody just because the FBI put some pressure on him. And so he didn't break. But he maybe forgot that he sent an email or something like that. So they actually forced him to sign a confession that he perjured himself to the FBI. And the leverage they used against him was threatening his son with prison time. The FBI threatened General Flynn's son with prison time in order to get him to sign a confession that he had perjured himself. This is totally unethical. This is totally inappropriate. This is un-American. This is the worst thing you could possibly imagine in a free country. This is mental. This is insane. This is the 21st century in America, and the FBI is coercing people into signing away their lives, going to prison potentially for perjury because they don't want their son to be punished by the FBI, who is targeting them. Anyway, so I bring these facts up to these guys, and one of the guys eventually gets, jumps out. We're in a big old jacuzzi, right? Like I said, it's a nice resort. And one of the guys jumps out of the jacuzzi and he says, I'm done. And he starts to run off. And, when somebody runs away from you, when you're having a political discussion, you know you've won. So just to put the barb in, just so that he could feel the sting as he was leaving, I said, you don't have to be emotional about it. Very calmly, you know. And then his friend, who didn't want to seem quite as desperate as he did, his friend, who was also there and was also arguing with me, turns to his wife and he says, so you don't want to go get dinner? And she, being a little bit cheeky, said, oh, I thought you said that all your favorite restaurants were closed. You didn't want to go out to dinner tonight. And he looked at her, clearly infuriated, and said, well, we'll find something. it was one of those moments where the wife is like, why are you kicking me under the table? So the two of them eventually left. She was snickering to herself. I think she enjoyed watching them get destroyed in an argument. I felt a bit bad about it. I didn't want to engage, actually, because I had just gotten to the hotel. I was a bit tired. I just wanted to relax. But, it's sometimes good to have this kind of dialogue with people you disagree with. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that Democrats don't want to hear all the information. They only want to hear just enough of the story so that it somehow fits their narrative. It fits what they believe. And as soon as you give them that extra bit of information, oh, you didn't know that General Flynn actually didn't sign that confession because he believed, you know, because he was guilty. He signed the confession because he was being leveraged by the FBI because they threatened his son. You didn't know that? As soon as you give them that extra bit of information, they freak out because maybe they didn't know it, or maybe they did know it and they had ignored it. So they suddenly they get frustrated. They can't deal with it. It's called cognitive dissonance. They can't contend with their version of the world and the truth being put right in front of them. And this is the problem, right? The left looks at arguments between the left and the right not as working through ideas, but they look at it as if they're good people that want to do the right thing. They want to do good things, right? And we're bad people. And somehow we use this magical tool called reason, this magical spell called logic. And we use that to defeat their arguments. And they don't like that. And so instead of contending with our arguments, they just want to shut those arguments down. And so this is why they're doing this. This is why they're shutting. We're not allowed to be on Twitter anymore. We're not allowed to be on Facebook. I'm sure YouTube's next. And now Parler's getting destroyed because they don't want conservatives to even be able to express ideas. They're pretending that it's because they're protecting us. They're protecting us from conspiracy theories and fake news. But really, they're protecting themselves from having to hear the truth. They're afraid of the truth getting spread. Because that's the deal, right? It's the internet. The internet has sort of democratized many things. It's democratized fame. You can be famous for all kinds of little niche things now, right? I'm a bit famous for just talking about politics. There are hundreds of thousands of people around the world who can now go on social media and get a following. If they know what they're talking about, if they're interesting, if they're funny. It used to be that people who were famous were chosen. But now anybody can do it. Just so long as you have something that people want to see, people want to talk about, people find interesting. In the same way, the internet has democratized the spreading of information. Everyone can be a newspaper now. As long as you're producing news that people want to hear or people feel that they need, you can be a successful distributor of information. But the left doesn't like that. Because if you're somebody who's trying to express a particular message, something that is not true, but you really want people to believe, it's very, very dangerous if other people come along and they speak the truth. Because if you're lying, you're lying. You're like, everybody's got to listen to this. Everybody's got to fit into this box, fit what they believe into this little box. And somebody comes in with the truth, people start looking away. They're not looking into your little world anymore. They're looking away. They start to drift over. And Democrats realize that this is happening. They realize that many people who are gullible, who are easily fooled into believing what they're saying, are experimenting a little. They're thinking, huh, what is this idea that I heard that sounds interesting? You know, what is this person talking about over here? Let me look over here. Let me look into this door. Let me look into that door. And what they're finding is that leftists are moving away, right? More black people voted for Trump in 2020 than in 2016. Hispanics shifted in massive numbers from 2016 to 2020, especially Cubans. Women shifted. Gays and lesbians. I'm not saying like gays and lesbians, you know, gay people more voted for, gay men more voted for Trump. I'm not saying that. I'm saying gay men voted for Trump in higher numbers than in 2016, but also lesbians. Now, that's bizarre. It's bizarre that why would lesbians vote in higher numbers for Trump in 2020 than 2016? Trump's resonating with literally everyone because it's very obvious that the Democrats are lying, right? Democrats lie about all kinds of stuff, pretty much everything. They have this very myopic worldview that is structured in a very specific way to get you to believe certain things. And gullible people have traditionally believed it. But now, people are waking up. People are realizing the truth. And you have to stop that. If you want to control people, you have to stop that. And so you have to take more and more severe draconian measures. You have to limit people's civil rights more and more. And that's where we get to this, right? We get to Nazi Germany. We get to the Soviet Union. I, for one, would rather live in the United States of America. But it seems that they have found a way to do it. First, they use COVID. Now they've gotten Trump out. They've gotten Biden in. They've got Nancy Pelosi controlling Congress, essentially. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. We know that. They're going to control every aspect of the federal government. And they found an ignition point. They found something that they can point to and say, this is why we're doing all of this. It was the siege of the Capitol building. It was a bunch of conservatives casually walking through the Capitol building. Those filthy deplorables. This was America's Reichstag fire. All right, well, that's it for me. And remember, it's not that our liberal friends are ignorant. It's just they know so much that is not so. Good night.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening.